Welcome to Content Conversations. I'm Andrew Dietz. I'm a partner with Creative Influence, and I have my colleague Natalie Springfield from Creative Influence with us as well. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Andrew.
So Creative Influence is a content marketing and PR firm that works with B2B companies to tell stories that help sell more stuff to more people more often for more money. And content is really moving marketing these days, and probably always has, but it's getting the recognition it deserves. And that said, it's changing tremendously, and you know, at the hands of a lot of different influences, from technology to just how people tell stories to kind of the economics and business models behind content and how they're powered by other technologies like crypto, blockchain, etc. So we're going to talk about those elements today. And we have in our studio three experts in different areas of content. We have Matt Crenshaw, who's the Chief Revenue Officer at USA Test Prep, and has a... Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. Good to be here.
And Matt has a long history in the content field, most recently with Outbrain as General Manager of North America. He was President of Mother Nature Network, which is a, shall we say, kind of a green content play. Mm-hmm. And before that was with Discovery Communications and How Stuff Works. We have Micah Sproul. Micah is Managing Partner at X Squared Ventures and CEO of MS2 Consulting, both of which are involved in the blockchain space and including how blockchain impacts content. Micah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And our studio today, by the way, is at the offices of MS2 Consulting in Buckhead, Atlanta. And we have Elizabeth Strickler. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth is has a title so long, I think she has a panoramic business card, horizontal. Director, Media Entrepreneurship and Innovation, Creative Media Industries Institute, and Blockchain Lab, RCB, at Georgia State University. What is RCB?
Those are two different positions. That's Robinson College of Business.
Oh, okay. Yes. Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, welcome.
Thank you. I get paid in words.
That's a really good thing.
That's a good way to start this off.
Yeah. And Elizabeth's background, I guess, was originally in digital film and fine arts and photography, and so is a creator herself, and has been involved in a number of different entrepreneurial ventures like Decent Labs, a global ecosystem focused on developing and accelerating new ventures that integrate decentralized technologies. So basically DLT blockchain stuff.
Yep.
Cool. Well, great. Well, thank you everybody for being here. And as we said earlier, there are a lot of angles on innovation, content innovation. I was reading earlier before we got started from a very important content source yesterday that had this headline: Word Innovate said 650,000 times at South by Southwest so far. People are saying the word innovate at a rate of 8.2 times per second, and at that pace we can estimate it will be uttered approximately 24 million times before the South by Southwest festival ends. The founder of South by Southwest said, outstripping only the terms increased social engagement and potential game changer. So that is from another kind of content innovation we're not really going to talk about, but that is the content innovation of fake news, and that's The Onion. So just in case anybody was taking us seriously about that. But anyway, innovation is the heavily, if not overused, term, and it means a lot of things. We're going to talk mostly about the kind of innovation that really changes things significantly, incremental, and the different aspects of what innovation could mean in content. But let's start with Matt, because you've got a pretty broad purview on content, what it is, what it can be. Talk to us a little bit about how you see, just from a very broad standpoint, what's happening with content innovation right now.
Wow, big question. Good question, though. I think what we're seeing overall is so much of content is moving to platforms. You know, we talk about media and we think about old media companies, and I've worked with one of these, you mentioned Discovery, and worked with many of them when I was at Outbrain, working with CNN, Condé Nast, Hearst, etc. But really when we think about content today, it's about LinkedIn, it's about Facebook, it's about Twitter. So I think the ability for content creators to adapt and to figure out what their content looks like on all of those platforms, given the mindset that people have when they're on those platforms, and to create a singular brand that's strong enough to work across multiple platforms. That to me is kind of the challenge that people have. It's a lot of individual publishing opportunities, but at the core, the brand of what that content creator stands for has to be clear.
So that brings to mind the idea of distribution. So content is king, but distribution is, I don't know what emperors are. Mm-hmm. So the internet allowed everybody, you know, anybody to create content, and we had multi-million individual little channels. Platforms are aggregators. They create a place for people to create content, a way to aggregate audience, but you still have to stand out on your own within those platforms. That's what you're saying? And also you have to adapt your content for each of what, like
yeah,
Instagram, how you present there is different than how you present.
Absolutely, and I think it's that much harder for brands to stand out on these platforms because people are thumbing through a feed, all of the posts look identical. So you have to think, what does the Wall Street Journal or any other media creator mean when they have really limited real estate to work with and really limited attention, where people have very specific expectations of that platform? So I do think people have to work harder to stand out more, mm-hmm. and also spend more time publishing to be in more places.
There's also the idea of platform as the physical device, which we maybe now sort of take for granted. Back in the earlier days in the 90s, when we were, you know, it was really sort of every new device that came on was like a shock to the system. It's less so now, but we still have new devices coming out. We still have to prepare content for those different devices, right? We're creating now just, there are people who are just creating for mobile. There are people just, I don't know, creating for tablets, perhaps. There are people just creating for, you know, TV devices, you know, et cetera. So foldable phones is an example that came up recently with a new client that Natalie and I have. How do you create content for foldable phones? I don't even know what a foldable phone is yet, but so I'm not sure I know how to answer that. But anyway, the idea of distribution is another element that is an innovation impactor, I guess, is a topic that we might want to get into. But Elizabeth, tell us how, especially at the Creative Media Industries Institute,
mm-hmm.
that is really also a broad purview, I guess, on
yeah.
content innovation. Content innovation is kind of what you guys are doing, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to branch off of what you all just said, and then I can go further into what Creative Media Industries Institute does as far as innovation goes. But this idea of platforms and aggregating users, I see a trend, and I'm going to be a little further out than you all are because I don't quite have a bottom line like you all do, but mm-hmm. I see a trend in more community building and building communities, which I think is very interesting. So there's content distribution, but there's also just gathering around an initiative or some sort. So I see more, instead of like getting users, you're getting members or of a group. And I find that really interesting. And it's starting to be a little bit more organic or more local in some ways when you do community building around issues. So I find that a trend that's very interesting. Like take, for example, something like meetup.com,
mm-hmm.
Where people get together around a particular initiative or hobby or interest. So I find that an interesting trend as far as content goes. And then just like you all were saying, content specific for the particular platform or arena that you need to build for. Of course, at the Creative Media Industries Institute, we're pushing into immersive content very quickly. So that is more augmented and virtual reality. areas, which is just yet another, now you'd not only have to have a web page and an Instagram and a Facebook and a LinkedIn as a company, then you also have to have some sort of augmented reality component to what you do. I don't know about virtual reality yet, but augmented reality is a layer of information that goes on top of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this whole mirror worlds emerging right now. So that's another trend.
Like the upside down?
Yeah, yes, pretty much. I see that. So trends, that I'll speak more about trends, So I see this sort of communities. I also see a trend of sort of mirror worlds or layers on top of reality that connect to reality, but that inform or entertain.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as another interesting thing.
Right. What's the so you have esports under the umbrella of the Creative Media Industries Institute?
Yes.
And that's I'm blanking. Is it Twitch that has that sort of
Twitch? Twitch is watched more than ESPN. Twitch is owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people are very confused about how you could watch other people play video games and have it be entertaining, but that's another example of how everything we do in the real world is being replicated in the virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
So, kids today play video games and kids today watch their friends play video games.
Mm-hmm. So, I know we're talking about how some of these new content elements can impact business marketing, B2B marketing,
mm-hmm.
Especially Twitch. I wonder if there are some lessons, takeaways from that, perhaps in executive education, just that ability to watch something and have conversations and interactions with others who are engaged in that same content.
I think also it's become pretty apparent that the esports is an incredible marketing opportunity.
That's true.
Yeah. And I would definitely be getting into that space.
Interesting. Yeah. That's even more direct. It's so many companies are build relationships and sell product and build brand through
mm-hmm.
sports marketing,
mm-hmm.
but esports is that Natalie has. Some experience in sports marketing, and her husband works for a major sports marketing firm. Have they addressed esports yet?
They are actually working with clients
mm-hmm.
to infiltrate that
mm-hmm.
that market.
Yeah.
So it's definitely on the forefront of what they're looking at.
Yeah, you might want to bring Mike and company over to
yeah.
the Creative Media Industries
yeah.
Institute downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, we're having a big event in April. I can't remember the day, called Pantherland.
Okay.
And it's a big esports
mm-hmm.
tournament.
And you guys have taken a building downtown and converted it into your, I don't mean to demean it by calling it that, but playground, essentially. I mean, it's so cool. Right?
Oh, the
so,
creative media?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I don't think that playground is a demeaning word.
No, it shouldn't be. We're lucky we play and work at the same time.
Yeah.
One more thing before we move to Micah, and that is, and I think it will be a link, right? And that is, talk to us a little bit about the Blockchain Lab and your experience with Decent Labs and how you see that and content impacting each other, if you do.
Okay. I'll just say a few things and maybe let Micah take it from there. But so I actually have a computer science background
mm-hmm.
And was part of this the rise of the internet and all of that. So I see that coming along again with the web, the third web, as some people call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just sort of make what we're doing at Georgia State. So Decent Labs was a place to test new blockchain initiatives. But I've put a lot more energy into the Blockchain Lab at Georgia State, where I'm basically taking every student that has any interest at all and teaching them what blockchain is and how it might impact whatever field they're coming from, and then teaching them how the technology works and a little bit of programming. And so just every single student. So very interested in kind of and getting perspective from so many, from a variety of students. But the main thing that I like to talk about and that I think is pretty provocative is that blockchain, the initial, you know, the first sort of case of blockchain is Bitcoin, which is taking money and making it programmable and digitized. And so that's very interesting. But from a content standard standpoint, what that means is now that we've put money and made it programmable like data, we're now treating our data like money. And that is the key, I think, to what's going on right now. And I think, you know, I think the thing that would be most important in the sort of long term right now is to think about your end users owning their own data and how you're going to have to change your entire business models and your platforms to protect that data just like you would protect money.
Gotcha. Micah, talk to us a little bit about what you've been doing with blockchain, MS2 Consulting, and how you see blockchain and content interacting.
Yeah, so at MS2, what we do is we go in and speak with institutions, you know, mid, large cap companies, and basically, you know, help them see their blockchain preparedness, you know, where they're at in the whole space as far as helping them understand, you know, does this technology, you know, how will it affect you positively or negatively? You know, how can you increase security, efficiency, etc.? How can you look to advantage yourself over your competition by kind of beating them to this in this race, or protecting from you know, upstart disruptors who basically may look at your business model and say, hey, you know, DLT or distributed ledger technology such as blockchain will help us kind of leapfrog what this larger incumbent's doing. So that's what we do at MS2. Basically just go in and help provide strategy for these companies more in the traditional space, because many of them just have no idea how to wrap their arms around this beast, much like companies, you know, in the internet age or, you know, moving to cloud. So that's what we do. In terms of content creation in blockchain or, you know, even more specifically the cryptocurrency space, you've got platforms like Steemit, not to be confused with Steam, the video game platform. Mm-hmm. But Steemit is essentially similar to Reddit, where you can go on and, you know, you create your own content, your own posts, and people can either upvote or downvote whether they, you know, like the content or agree with it. So the censorship sort of happens on a user level, and you actually have to give up resources. You have to have, you know, stake interest in the platform using their native currency in order to, you know, vote something up or vote something down. And we've seen that platform, you know, I've used it. I've even held the Steemit tokens myself. It came around in 2016, I believe. They've got well over 1 million users now. Mm-hmm. Predominantly, the content on there is cryptocurrency focused, but you're starting to see, you know, when I used it over a year ago, you're seeing people posting their recipes for cooking and how-tos for automotive repair. You know, all sorts of very interesting things are starting to kind of pop up that are not just crypto-centric. And then another example is, so that's kind of more in writing and such, but in the video space, as far as content goes, you've got a platform that formerly was YouNow. That wasn't blockchain or crypto related, and then they saw the opportunity to capitalize on that, kind of decentralize what they do, and they converted to, rebranded to Props. Mm. They've got a native token as well. And basically what Props is a interactive platform. I would say they're kind of a competitor to YouTube, where you can go on and you create content, whether you're a guitar player or a singer or a comedian. People will, you know, you'll grow a fan base. People go on there and reward you for your content. You could even, you know, speaking of Twitch, I think you could even, you know, have people stream you playing video games, things like that. Another new feature they just added is, you know, the ability to watch sports, you know, broadcast sports games, watch them together in a video room. And you can all cheer on your favorite players and reward each other in the native token. So, you know, they've got, I wanted to say...
like fantasy football.
Correct.
Heaven.
Right, exactly. And I was reading the statistics recently. I think, you know, when they were YouNow, a year or two ago, they had over 100 million unique user productions. So, you know, I don't know what you would call it. But basically, there were over 100 million unique videos that have been produced by people on a monthly basis. I mean, they're quite popular. So now they've been converting into the kind of a blockchain platform. That's another, you know, great example of what people are doing, where basically the company is trying to kind of disintermediate what, you know, larger groups like monopolies such as YouTube have on the space. So those are just two examples of what's going on in the space. And one interesting thing I'll note too, there's a quote recently that basically blockchain or technologies like Bitcoin make the message is the medium now. And what they meant by that was traditionally you'd have like mainstream media where they have high production costs, you know, tons of people that are helping with these broadcasts, and they put an emphasis on the value of their message is based on the cost of producing it. And now what you're having with, take for example even Twitter and these other platforms where basically anyone around the world can be, you know, an expert on anything, and you know, you get your voice for free. Now, you know, blockchain is taking a step further with saying, well, no longer do you need something like Twitter where one single multinational organization is taking all the profit. You can go on here for free and not worry about being censored. And if you create this yourself, you can actually gain the value out of that 100%. So really what it does is it puts an emphasis on the message, not the medium. And so you take away all the overhead of the medium, which everyone used to emphasize as, well, if this had a high production value, then it's obviously got value. Less so about the message. And now it's all about the message. The message is really the medium. So I thought that was an interesting take on the whole thing, where really your value is the message itself.
So I've heard twice now this idea of the going back. Our innovation is coming in some ways from things we did before. We're going back to certain things, sort of like when bell bottoms came back in style. No, it's not like that. So when the internet started to be used in a way that wasn't just by the military, right? It started Howard Rheingold and I don't know, Stuart Brand and these guys, the guy who created Whole Earth Catalog way back. Counterculture people, right? Started using the internet as a message board to have conversations. It was all about community. Then it began to, you know, we got the web and we got broadband, and all of a sudden, you know, this medium started to change. It became e-commerce, it became the kind of bigger forms of entertainment, social media, et cetera, and then platforms began to come, right? So we moved from community to kind of not quite mass entertainment. I guess maybe it is mass entertainment, really. The other thing is that when the internet started, everybody had the message was the medium because everybody had their own website. Again, now, as Matt was, we were talking about earlier, everything's sort of aggregated because it's hard to get audience. Blockchain is an example of something that helps disintermediate and push things back out the way they were before. And Elizabeth, to your point, maybe you didn't say it this way, but I'm thinking that, you know, technology, you know, social media has, even though in some ways they're platforms for communication and community, in quotes, mm-hmm. they've created a lot of distance between people. And you're seeing that trend sort of shifting back to the beginning, or am I misreading
that? No, that's definitely true. I think I really like what Micah was saying. The message is the medium. To the platforms now, you know, we've seen this sort of, you know, dominant platforms at the moment. And the other term that people say is if the product is free, you are the product.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, you know, everybody is the product and they're giving away their data to create those platforms. So in that sense, and also when we're talking about blockchains, when you, I see that each different blockchain ecosystem is its own community where tokens are traded.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that a very interesting, but you're part of the platform or the ecosystem, except for that you own a part of it,
mm-hmm.
because you can buy tokens and trade tokens, and whether those have a monetary value or a social value, whatever value they have within that community.
Interesting. Well, civilizations do build around currency, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that we're sort of re-evaluating what is incentive, what is value, what is community. And I get to say these things in this sort of more erudite way because I'm not, and you know, trying to, you know, keep a company afloat. So, but I do think that that's happening right now, and we're seeing shifts.
So go ahead, Matt.
But if I may jump in on what Elizabeth is saying, coming from, you know, keeping a company afloat,
yes.
So much of the open web was funded by advertising, and that advertising really grew up around data. So it's interesting to see what I think blockchain, like the Basic Attention Token,
mm-hmm.
and the Brave browser and some of these initiatives are doing. I think they're in the early stages, but essentially, to your point, moving more of the ownership back to people participating, creating content, people knowing what their data is worth and having an investment,
mm-hmm.
like Micah was saying, where you're actually an owner in that system,
mm-hmm.
versus contributing to a platform that's taking your data and using advertising, right, to make money. So I think advertising, as we know, has been sort of the interim solution before maybe we get back to the way things were.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I know we could talk about this. I mean, this is a huge, huge topic, and we're just, you know, sort of grazing the surface of it. And as close as we all are to changes taking place in content, we really can only predict one thing, and that is this change is continuing and accelerating. And I hope you guys will join me again, maybe sometime in the not too distant future, to see how things have changed and maybe get your views and predictions for what's next. In the meantime, Matt, Elizabeth, Micah, thank you so much for joining Natalie and I. And for those of you listening, please tune in again for Content Conversations. Thank you.